much you could save.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated. Career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award. Find news about federal information assurance and new information from various agency CISOs and CIOs on the Federal Security Spotlight on federalnewsradio.com, sponsored by Cisco.
Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now. In Depth with Francis Rose, Monday through Friday, 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Want to know how Congress is affecting your agency's staffing and budget? Want to learn more about the relationship between your agency and its contractors? Helps you become a better manager by exploring the best ways to manage projects, manage your workforce, and manage yourself. In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us as we are here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. And got two very interesting guests today that are going to, we're going to cover the waterfront. We're going to talk about surviving the furloughs if there is a government shutdown, that what's happening with the U.S. Postal Service, a new pay raise, a new contract with the American Postal Workers Union. And I'll be talking with Steve Watkins, who is the editor of the Federal Times, later on in the show. And first up, in keeping with our practice here where everybody is named Steve, normally we have Steve Watkins and Steve Losey doing part-time. Today we have Steve Bauer, and you are the executive director of the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund, FEA.
Well done, Mike. You got it correct.
Great. Okay. And Steve, FEA is so interesting. I don't know where to begin, but got a note here from Mr. O'Connor, and he says he wishes you well. I think you play golf with him and raise funds. And then I've got one from Randy Partum in Quantico, Virginia, and he said he was referring to today's column about your appearance, and he said, I've never heard of FEA before. It sounds like a super cool outfit. And FEA really is a super cool outfit. Tell us what you do.
Well, our mission is straightforward, and it's an unusual mission. We're kind of a niche charity, if you will. Our mission is to assist federal employees in their times of need, and that we do that through educational assistance and emergency financial assistance. We do it throughout the year. We run an annual scholarship program, and in fact, our scholarship competition is open right now and ends next Friday. People have to have their applications postmarked to send in. And we also do emergency financial assistance every day. There are federal employees that need help whether or not they're furloughed. Federal employees are regular people. My dad was a federal employee. I'm a retired federal employee. And I've known thousands, tens of thousands of federal employees throughout my life. And they're your neighbors. I live in a middle-class neighborhood. I have some neighbors that are rich. I have some that are being foreclosed on. Mm-hmm. Federal employees are just average Americans, if you will. Sometimes they need help. People don't think they ever do. They think they're fat cats. We know better than that, and we're there to help them. There's a lot of people sitting at a federal desk today, I can guarantee you, that have an eviction notice in their pocket or a utility shutoff, and they're worried when their kids come home tonight whether or not the lights will be on.
So much for the fat cats, huh?
Exactly. And we see it every day of the week. The same things that happen to other people, car accidents, sick children, deaths in the family. We're talking a little bit about furloughs today. People don't save. There was an amazing study done very recently that was across America, not just federal employees, but all Americans. And what it found was that close to 50% of American households were either absolutely sure or pretty sure that if an emergency occurred, that they could not raise $2,000 within 30 days. It's a frightening statistic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, the other side of that is people are talking about surviving a furlough, surviving a shutdown where you may or may not get paid, and you certainly would get paid late. And you actually have been there, done that, because in the 95-96 furlough, you were with FIA even then. How did that work?
Well, it was an incredible happenstance in terms of the pressure it put on our agency, the number of people that needed help. That's why we know, and we're gearing up in case it does happen. We were absolutely inundated with people that needed help. People write checks before their paycheck comes. They know it won't clear until their paycheck is deposited in their account. The check doesn't go in, the checks start bouncing. There's a lot of people that truly have no savings out there. We just had application after application coming in, and this is before we had a website, before email was a popular way of doing things with attachments, and it was a bit of a different world, if you will. We had the old fax machines with the thermal paper in it that were hard to read and would curl up. Our fax machine was running 24 hours a day, never stopped. We'd have to change the paper regularly because people were faxing in applications for assistance. People that didn't have access to a fax machine, not everybody did back then, they would be mailing in applications. The post office was sending their own mail trucks just for our office with piles and piles of applications. We were absolutely swamped. We had volunteers come in to help us open applications. We were processing them as fast as we could. We sent out about $60,000. Thankfully, at that time, after the furloughs, people were made whole. They did get their paychecks back, or at least most of them did. And there's a misconception that people think everybody did, but a lot of people were just beyond, they were pulling their hair out. They didn't know what to do. They couldn't even put food on the table.
Well, you have these WAEs when actually employed, and if they weren't employed, they didn't get paid. The contractors, many of them didn't get paid. I was surprised at how, I mean, and it just shows you the desperation factor. You mentioned in that piece you wrote for, in fact, it's in today's column, but you mentioned in that piece that some people were asking for as little as $100 just to get by.
They had no food. I mean, they couldn't feed their kids, and that's what they needed, was $100 to buy food. Other people needed much more to keep from being evicted.
Now, if somebody wants to either give money to FIA, get more information about it, or apply for a scholarship, have you got a website we can cite?
Absolutely. It's a new age, which is okay. Wonderful. Yeah. www.feea.org. And it's .org because we're a charity. We're not a government agency. We don't get federal funds. We're not a for-profit agency. We're not a .com. It's FIA.org, a pretty simple web address. You can get the scholarship application there. You can get the emergency assistance application there. And if furloughs become a real imminent threat, we will have a special page right from the homepage where people can go to get the application. They'll be able to fill it out and get it back to us immediately.
Okay, I bet some people are going to be filling them out now in anticipation of this thing, which was, shutdowns were a bluff and a joke for many years, and then 95, 96 changed all that, and they have become very real possibilities now.
Absolutely, and you mentioned WAEs, but there are people that would get night differential, for example. They lost that. They didn't get it. They might have gotten back pay. There are people that regularly work overtime, and they count on that money to pay their bills. You don't get overtime for, even if you're made whole for a time that you're furloughed. So a lot of people were out money that was very significant to them.
Now, if I'm a federal worker or a retiree, correct me if I'm wrong, can I apply to you for a scholarship for myself or my kid or even grandchild?
Actually, for active federal employees, they can apply for scholarships for themselves, and many employees are continuing their education. They want to move up, and it's very difficult to juggle work and school and to pay for it, particularly if you have a family. But also children of federal employees and spouses of federal employees are eligible to apply. In terms of retirees, we do have some special programs that we run separate from our regular programs for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, NARF. We do have scholarships available for children and grandchildren of NARF members. So it's not all federal employees. You have to be a NARF member to apply, and because that money comes from NARF members. They donate to that program, and we provide $61,000 scholarships each year to NARF members' children and grandchildren. Now, that program is for high school seniors only. The regular FIA program for active employees, spouses, and children includes high school seniors, kids already in college, and even kids going to graduate school. And most federal employees are usually going to graduate school, trying to improve themselves.
Great. Okay. You two stories that I never get tired of hearing. One is it beautiful. It's tragic, but it's beautiful. The other one is it started out with a tragedy, but it's funny. But tell us about the time you got on a plane with a suitcase full of money.
that was also in the 1990s, actually the early 1990s, 1992. If the people that remember Hurricane Andrew, it really wiped out Homestead, Florida. And there was Homestead Air Force Base right there. I was at a conference out of town and got a call from somebody at Homestead and said, Steve, we know what you do. You help federal employees when they have needs. We have a lot of needs. We need you down here. We need you down here now, and we need you to bring cash. And it was somebody I trusted.
Yeah.
I didn't ask for any explanation. I said, you got it. Went to a bank, basically emptied out our bank account and got $100 bills, $40,000, which was a lot of money in the early 90s, a lot of money now to be carrying around, and had to get on a plane in Denver and fly into Miami, Florida.
Did you dress like a drug dealer just to make sure there was no problem?
Yeah, those that don't remember, I mean, that was, we were fighting the war on drugs then, not on the war on terrorism, and I was very nervous, and I was carrying a lot of cash, and I wasn't going to let it out of my sight. Uh-huh. The TSA folks knew I was nervous, and they took me aside, and I would not empty out my pocket. I'd show them what was in it, but I wasn't going to give them the $40,000 in cash. I finally was able to get on the plane and land in Miami, Florida, and sure enough, I got picked up by what was then called the U.S. Customs Service. Uh-huh. But thankfully, it was on purpose. It had been arranged by folks down there. They picked me up on a Black Hawk helicopter at the airport because that's the only way you could have gotten down to Homestead.
And, that's something important with Hurricane Katrina and other disasters, particularly if they're water-related, because those linger for a long, long time. But, we all want to go to the Giant or the Safeway and send them cans of beans and tuna. But what they need is money. Right? They need to buy these things on the spot, and they need to be able to pay bills. And didn't you tell me that Postal Service people went out with the VA people and Social Security people? I mean, it was a sort of concerted effort to get checks to people who needed them?
Absolutely. I remember seeing them as the old postal jeeps, if you remember, with the actual tops that came off, and they were driving around neighborhoods that had been wiped out, mobile home parks where you didn't even know what address it was. The postal people, thankfully, knew the routes, knew where to find people, and they had the Social Security checks and the VA checks. People didn't have direct deposit. And like you were saying, when electricity is out, even if you have money, there's no ATM. It doesn't work. You can't get money.
Cash
people need
king,
to buy water.
Yeah.
They need, and of course, unfortunately, some unscrupulous people are jumping up prices.
Yeah.
It costs a lot to buy water. Roads were impassable. You couldn't get anywhere. People absolutely needed that money immediately.
Yeah, most of us have never been through anything like that, thankfully, but it's a lot tougher than it seems to be. The other story, I tell this to friends. I'll tell them about FIA and what you've done, and this is just heartwarming, heartbreaking, about the kids of the families of the those who were killed in Oklahoma City. What was your promise to them, or FIA's promise to those kids?
Well, when you think about what we do and what our mission is to help federal employees, I mean, most of the people, the 168 people that died that day in that terrorist bombing of the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City were civilian federal employees. Those are the folks that we help. We were there assisting them, getting all sorts of things done. We had a lot of volunteers. Sometimes what they needed was relatives picked up at the airport. Sometimes they needed their house cleaned because the relatives were, whatever made them feel better. But also a lot of people needed money for a lot of different reasons. Americans and people worldwide started contributing, and we realized that despite the fact we were spending record amounts of money to help the people with their immediate needs, that we were going to have excess funds. When you consider that we provide emergency assistance, which what we were doing, but we also do scholarships, we announced that any money that we did not need for immediate assistance would go into a scholarship fund for the kids that lost a parent there. We had no idea when we said that we were talking about 200 children. Now here we are 16 years later, and we have put about 170 of those 200 children through college. no cost to them, whatever school they want to go to. We've got about 30 left to go. We still have about 6 years left in the program, but we will finish that job. And every one of those children is so very thankful that we remember the fact that their folks died in their service to America.
We've got to take a short break here. When we come back, I'm talking to Steve Bauer, the Federal Employee Education Assistance, so more about the scholarships for the kids of the Oklahoma City.
Brought to you by Arink.
Anthrax is still a threat. Awareness of and knowledge about the substance is important, according to experts. Anthrax is an acute disease caused by Bacillus anthracis. It affects both humans and animals, and most forms of the disease are highly lethal. There are effective vaccines, though. The symptoms usually start with cold or flu-like symptoms for several days, followed by severe and often fatal respiratory collapse. I'm J.J. Green.
A concern of every pilot is the weather and needing to know if the conditions are about to deteriorate either on the flight path or where the aircraft is landing. That's where AirInc comes in. At the aircrew's request, AirInc texts the latest weather information directly to the cockpit, thus providing pilots the information they need to decide whether to change routes or divert to another landing location. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
This week's Kaiser Permanente Experts in Health topic is colorectal cancer awareness, featuring Dr. John Lee, Assistant Physician in Chief for D.C. and Suburban Maryland for the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group.
Colorectal cancer is the second leading cause of cancer deaths in the U.S. Estimates are that regular screening can prevent up to 60% of these cancer deaths. At Kaiser Permanente, we estimate that we saved about 150 lives in 2010 through early detection among our Mid-Atlantic members. There are three common types of colon cancer screening tests. Colonoscopy, while most widely known, is also the most invasive. An alternative is the less invasive sigmoidoscopy. A third choice is a fecal occult blood test, which is entirely non-invasive. Starting at age 50, men and women should begin screening. Talk with your doctor about when to start and how often you should be screened. If you're 50 or older, getting a colorectal cancer screening could help save your life. Be well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's Experts in Health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Hey, Cats fans, place a deposit for full season tickets now and reserve your spot for the 2011-2012 season. Deposits are fully refundable and can be used towards other ticket purchases while retaining your place in line for full season plans next season. For more info on placing your full season ticket deposit, call 202-266-CAPS or log on to WashingtonCaps.com and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Hi, I'm Neil Asbury, host of The Neil Asbury Show. Please join me and my guests each week as we discuss the importance of international trade, entrepreneurialism, small business ownership, job creation, and the American dream.
The Neil Asbury Show, Saturday mornings at 8 on Federal News Radio. The Neil Asbury Show is sponsored by AIT Worldwide Logistics, Yoakum Shore and Trossaven, and WTS, Withers Worldwide Transportation Systems.
The website of the week is the Google Transparency Report. Now, this site includes an interactive map, so you can click on different countries. The Chinese officials consider censorship demands to be state secrets, so we cannot disclose that information at this time. This can show traffic patterns. If a country blocks internet access, you can immediately see this. You can see if any countries are blocking internet traffic. The Google Transparency Report.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Last April, 256 senior federal managers went missing. Are you next? The most successful managers know to never pass up an opportunity to learn. Join them this year to discover how to maximize your agency's forward momentum at the Federal Senior Management Conference at the Hyatt Regency Chesapeake Bay in Cambridge, Maryland, this April 10th through 13th. The Federal Senior Management Conference is the preeminent conference for senior federal managers, presented for government by government advisors, with registration open only to government employees. Register now at fedsmc.com or call 202-237-0300.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Steve Bauer. He is the executive director of the FEA, Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. And see, we got a caller on the line, Carl Colder. Carl, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Carl, what are you up to?
Hey, I'm staying busy here in Arlington, Virginia, but I'd like to say hello to Steve. Of course, I'm the president for the National Association of Black Narcotic Agents, and FIA is our proud sponsor. And I've known Steve for about 6 years now, and he's helped our organization grow tremendously. So I just want to just recognize the fact that his organization is doing great things for families, for students, and for everybody who's in need. So thank you, Steve, for doing what you do.
Carl, thanks for calling. His eyes lit up when he heard you were on the line. Thanks a lot. Hey, wait, thank you, sir. Hey, we also got a fan note from Tom O'Connor of the IRS, and he says, federal workforce remains fortunate to have Steve and the great staff at FIA on our side. Wish Steve all the best. I'll tune in if I can at 10 a.m. Hope you're out there, Tom. And he's an old golfing buddy of yours, right?
He is, actually. They don't like to announce it. Believe me, they're all on vacation time when they do it, but they do a golf tournament every year for charity. We're one of the fortunate charities to benefit from that, and I get to play in every year out in Front Royal. So, you know, it makes a good point. We said that we don't get federal funds. We're a charity.
Yeah.
People, we get donations, and we do it together with federal employees, with federal employee organizations, like the IRS Golf League, like the National Association of Black Narcotics Agents, like the Federal Managers Association. Unions help us. We have unions on our board. We have federal professional agencies on our board.
I know we were talking about the Oklahoma City Scholarship. She said 200 kids, most are through, but you've kind of had to be a surrogate parent for some of those kids. And also the same effort for 9/11 children, right?
Yeah, most people, I don't think many people realize that the majority of the people that died in the Pentagon on 9/11 and the majority of the folks that were injured and severely burned by jet fuel, there were some horrific injuries. We're civilian federal employees. We did lose some soldiers and we lost some sailors, no airmen, but a lot of civilian federal employees. And we set up a similar program to Oklahoma City. Kids of those that were injured and not able to return to work or who died, their children are getting full college scholarships from us. We've had kids through Ivy League schools. They are so incredibly thankful.
Do you know how many children are eligible for the scholarships?
From 9/11 in the Pentagon, there were about 52, and several were already in college, and it's been about 10 years, so we're more than halfway through that program as well.
And one of the Oklahoma City kids, as I believe, had not been born the father was killed.
That is correct. The youngest was actually born 3 months after the bombing of the Murrah Federal Building.
Now I know you're part of the Combined Federal Campaign. People can give through that, and they can send in a check. But is there a way people can give online to FIA?
Yeah, that's
and is it tax deductible?
It is tax deductible as allowed by law. My friends at IRS tell me I have to add that.
Right.
But yes, we are a 501c3 charity, just like the Heart Association or the Red Cross. And people can give online at FIA.org. They can do it via credit card. We have people that are what we call friends of FIA, where they give a monthly allotment on their credit card. They can set that right up on there. The CFC is our bread and butter, and it's wonderful, but it's a once a year, and the CFC's done for this year. So we will have money coming in from last fall's CFC. But if we get hit with furloughs, for example, we're going to need a lot of money to help all these folks.
That's a great idea. Give $10 a month or whatever you can.
We go with $12.50, actually.
Yeah, all right.
It's $150 a year, and you become a Friends of FIA. We don't have membership, if you will. You don't have to give to get.
Very good. Listen, Steve Bauer, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll get you back here. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back talking with another Steve Watkins, the editor of the Federal Times.
ComSatCom report provided by Hughes.
Completing our mission requires that my unit maintain net-centric communications with our command at all times. Whether we are at base or out in the field, satellite is the best option to maintain communication in conflict zones, both mountainous and urban areas. But we are experiencing a bandwidth crisis.
The growing demand for intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance applications requires more efficient use of high-capacity bandwidth to maintain communications in theater. Hughes can provide the satellite networking and bandwidth you need, when you need it, and wherever your mission may take you. Hughes employs the latest commercial technologies to deploy secure, high-capacity networks, which are the most bandwidth-efficient in the world and stay within tight military budget constraints. To learn more about our technologies and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes on the web at defense.hughes.com.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Army is working on keeping deployed soldiers connected to each other and to the network using commercial off-the-shelf technology in smartphones. The Multi-Access Cellular Extension Program is developing phones that can operate securely on cellular data networks around the world or on Wi-Fi hotspots. If neither of those are available, the phones will be designed to form their own local network and keep soldiers in a small unit at least connected to each other.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com. Tune in to The Federal Drive every weekday morning from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Hear news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Tom and Amy will give you the information you need to help explain and navigate your world. Listen on the radio at Federal News Radio 1500 AM, morning 6 to 10, or go to federalnewsradio.com and click Listen Live. The Federal Drive is sponsored by Symantec Confidence in a connected world. Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday mornings at 10, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
John Owens is the Chief Information Officer of the Patent and Trademark Office. He says a new online collaboration tool lets examiners work together on the same document.
We can literally put up in kind of a whiteboard scenario a document that the office receives, and literally with two different color virtual pens, our examiner can mark in one color and the other person on the other end of the conversation can mark in a different color and actually collaborate over a piece of electronic media.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation. You can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. And I just had a very nice conversation with Steve Bauer from FIA, and we'll have that website up on our homepage here so you can contribute. I hadn't thought of that, but there are people who give every month, and the preferred amount, minimum amount, if you want to donate, is $12.50 a month, and that's $150 a year. Now we have another. The importance of being Steve. Steve Watkins is on the line. Steve, you with us?
I sure am.
Thank you for hanging on. Steve is editor of the Federal Times, and there's so much going on here. I don't really know where to start. How about this? This new contract that the American Postal Workers Union has signed with their, or I guess has worked out with the Postal Service.
Yeah, that's a big deal for the Postal Service. Obviously, the APWU, which represents the postal clerks and mechanics and truck drivers, maintenance staff, so forth, That is the biggest union in the Postal Service, so getting this deal behind them is a big step for the Postal Service. They still have another big step to go, however. The rural carriers are also in contract discussions. However, they're at an impasse, so we'll see what happens there. But on this contract, it's a four-and-a-half-year contract. It provides raises to approximately 205,000 employees, but it does force them to pay a little bit more for their health insurance. But in terms of the raises, they will get 3.5% over the life of the contract, and that contract would expire in May 2015. And so they would start off with a 1% raise beginning this November. So the APWU membership will be voting in the next few weeks on this. And one of the key things that it does, and this is important for both the union and the Postal Service, I think, it's going to prohibit layoffs of career employees who were hired before this latest contract expired. But for the newer employees, that they would be eligible for layoffs.
Well, that is huge in a number of ways. A, to be getting a pay raise in these times when white-collar workers are frozen for at least 2 years, and the paying a little more for health insurance, nobody wants to do that, but it will still be a very good deal because of the situation they had before. And then this no layoff, again, is huge in these times, and given some of the financial problems Postal Service has had because of the requirement that it pre-fund retirement benefits. And also, as you talked about a couple of weeks ago, the changing technology is, when people talk about snail mail, they mean it.
Yeah, exactly. And, the long-term trends for the Postal Service are don't look good. First-class postage is plummeting, and the Postal Service is putting its bet on standard mail, which is, of course, a lot of the pre-sorted, pre-stamped kind of business-to-consumer mail. And they look to they're pretty much not giving up on first-class mail, but certainly understand and realize that that's not going to be the core of their business as it used to be. And their mail volume has been plummeting. It was as high as 213 billion pieces in 2006, and that's projected to fall considerably. By 2020, that'll be down to 150 billion pieces, they project. So, reducing the size of the workforce to meet that declining mail volume is critical for the Postal Service.
How about the 5-day week, delivery week? Is that still with us, the potential?
Well, the Postal Service folks, we had Postmaster General Patrick Donahue meet with the Federal Times editorial board last week, and we actually discussed that at some length. In his mind, and in the organization's mind, they are still promoting this and feel it's critical to their success. And understandably so. Their competitors, FedEx, UPS, have 5-day delivery regimes. In some neighborhoods, it's even down to as low as 2 or 3 days, depending on how remote it is. Postal Service doesn't have that luxury, and they are pressing it. However, many in Congress don't seem receptive. The administration doesn't seem receptive. In their latest budget proposal from the White House, they did not sign on to that. So they have a high mountain to climb on this one, but their argument is that if we don't do it, we are going to be in chronically financially dismal shape. And, I think Pat Donahue makes a very clear-cut and convincing case that transitioning from 6-day to 5-day delivery is critical.
Well, I think so many people lose sight of what the Postal Service does vis-a-vis FedEx and UPS and these other special delivery things, because the the private ones can really skim the cream off this and take what they want to deliver and reject the rest. Whereas the Postal Service, if you put 47 cents on a stamp or whatever it is on an envelope and mail it from Key West, Florida to Nome, Alaska, they've got to take it, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're in a straitjacket here because of the mandatory delivery and service mandates that they have from Congress.
Blame it all on Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah.
Steve, you mentioned that you got a draft look at the Defense Department's shutdown plans. How's that looking?
Well, for your audience and our audience who are civilian federal employees, it doesn't really tell us much that we didn't already know. We already knew, for instance, that civilian employees who were not in some capacity either directly supporting or actually in the business of protecting life, property, and national security, those folks are going to be exempt if there is a shutdown. In other words, they will not have to take a furlough. However, other civilian employees will still need to take a furlough. And the way the department has kind of spelled that out, basically for civilian employees, only a minimum number of civilians needed to support those exempted activities, and those are what I mentioned about protecting life and property, national security. Only a minimal number will be retained. Positions that, as I say, that provide direct support to exempted activities, if they are critical to performing those activities, will be retained. And these determinations are going to be made on a position-by-position basis. And, of course, the Defense Department has something like 700,000, roughly, civilian employees, and this includes senior executive service and so forth. So they are going to be going job by job, basically making that decision. Same thing with contract employees. Obviously, in the Defense Department, a lot of the defense programs and office buildings are, filled with contract employees. And same thing goes with them. If they are in a capacity where they are directly supporting those exempt activities, they'll be asked to stay. Now, and the military, of course, will be exempt, meaning they will continue to be on the job. However, it was a bit of a surprise to us to see in there that military personnel would not get paid if there is a shutdown. They would get paid like the exempted civilian employees and exempted contract employees. They would get paid after Congress resolves any shutdown and passes an appropriation and pays them retroactively.
That's not a real good policy, it would seem, in a time when you've got two hot wars going on. Congress ought to consider things like this.
Yeah, it's just crazy. When you talk to some of these department managers and leaders, and they don't hide it, they are extremely frustrated by the current situation, and understandably so. This is just such a inefficient way to run things, and I think we're seeing members of Congress, acknowledging that in the debate. Of course, the House passed this three-week CR yesterday. It's expected to pass the Senate later this week. That will extend the federal government spending for another 3 weeks until April 8th. And we saw in that debate that there clearly is a breaking point here, that we cannot likely expect Congress to continue passing these 2-3 week CR extensions.
Well, I finally figured out why they're passing a 3 week extension this time and hoping to get it out on Friday, because they're going to be away for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about part time. And then when they come back, they're going away on a constituent work period, which means they're going on vacation. But when they come back, they will be here for a while, and then they will take close to a month for a spring break. So if there's another continuing resolution, it's going to probably have to be for 5 or 6 weeks so they can come back and keep extending it.
Well, Congress's popularity figures are about as low as they've ever been. The last poll I saw, I think it was something like 25% of Americans view them favorably, which is something like a 7-point dip since just the last month or two. So, they're feeling the heat on this, but they don't seem to be showing it to them.
When your occupation drops below the media in public esteem, you know you're in bad shape.
Yeah.
Steve, back to the defense for a minute. In the 95-96 shutdown, I noticed looking at the Congressional Research Service history of it, that there were something like 600,000 people out in the first shutdown and only 300 the second. And I guess that was a combination of some budgets had been passed and they found out that a lot of employees are essential and have to be kept on the job.
Yeah, I have to admit, I don't know the nitty-gritty of those shutdowns, but that's exactly right. That second one that you referred to was just a partial shutdown, that there had been some of the spending bills passed, so it did affect a smaller slice of the government.
Yeah, you think we'd learn. Need to take a short break here. I'm talking with Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times. We'll be right back here on 1500 AM.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common. The same timepiece, a Rolex Day-Date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store. Tourneau. The Fashion Center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Dr. Ernest McDuffie, lead for the National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, commented during the panel discussion titled Cyber Hire, Ramping Up the Cyber Workforce.
We see cybersecurity as an enabler that really underpins all the STEM fields. Last 50 years, you take computers and networks out of STEM, you really have a pretty dismal picture.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
New cyber threats emerge every day. To stay ahead of the ever-evolving threat environment, organizations must develop a strong cybersecurity workforce. The highly trained and qualified cybersecurity workers, managers, and leaders who are critical to addressing current and future challenges. Booz Allen Hamilton Strategy and technology consultants possess deep experience helping organizations develop all aspects of a cybersecurity workforce across human capital management, awareness and communications, education and training, and leadership development. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Anthrax is still a threat. Awareness of and knowledge about the substance is important, according to experts. Anthrax is an acute disease caused by Bacillus anthracis. It affects both humans and animals, and most forms of the disease are highly lethal. There are effective vaccines, though. The symptoms usually start with cold or flu-like symptoms for several days, followed by severe and often fatal respiratory collapse. I'm J.J. Green.
A concern of every pilot is the weather, and needing to know if the conditions are about to deteriorate either on the flight path or where the aircraft is landing. That's where Airink comes in. At the aircrew's request, Airink texts the latest weather information directly to the cockpit, thus providing pilots the information they need to decide whether to change routes or divert to another landing location. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Here's Stephen Rice, Deputy CIO TSA DHS on the Federal Executive Forum at the DHS CIO Roundtable live from the 2011 FCA Homeland Security Conference.
TSA data anytime, anywhere. That's really moving our organization from a much, much, much more mobile organization. Whether that's domestically working at the aviation checkpoints, being able to, or access that data anywhere in the terminal. That's a key element of where we're going as an organization.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Join AFSEA for critical issues in C4I, May 24th through 25th at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. Together with the George Mason University C4I Center for Excellence, AFSEA brings you the experts in cloud computing, network security, and military use of commercial IT. Exhibit and sponsorship opportunities are available. Register and collaborate with your colleagues today at www.afcea.org, keyword GMU. The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight is the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. For more than two decades, Walk MS has been the rallying point of the MS movement. Funds raised at Walk MS fund research to find a cure and support vital programs for the many thousands of people living with MS. Come together with your family and friends to declare we are the movement to end MS. Choose one of six different Walk MS sites on April 9th, 10th, and 16th. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and we're talking with Steve Watkins. He's editor of the Federal Times, and we've been sort of covering the waterfront here, talking about the new Postal Service contract, which is a very big deal indeed. And I guess the APW is the largest of all the federal unions. Steve, we were talking before the show about the CBO options for cutting federal spending, CBO being Congressional Budget Office. And as I understand it, and I know we frequently, we use the wrong terminology. We say these are, the CBO has proposed something. And in fact, the CBO people have corrected me. They say, we're not really proposing anything. What we're doing is saying, you want ideas for how to save money. Here's how you can save money. You know, you lose 25 pounds of ugly fat, cut off your head, that kind of thing. But they're not proposing it as such. They're just giving us an option. So is that your understanding?
Yeah, that's correct. These are just a slate of options. And they come out with this report every budget cycle for Congress and lawmakers to look through and debate. And I think it's a wonderful report just because the CBO has been doing this for a while, and they spell it out very concisely what the options are and what the drawbacks are, and they even kind of outline very briefly what the pros and cons are in this pretty straightforward way. So I think it's a useful tool.
Well, I know in my newspaper days, the real estate writers used to look for it every year because one of the options that the CBO presented would be to eliminate the tax break for home mortgages, and the columnists could write about that for months, about how the horrors of it. And of course, it never had any chance of happening given the realities of things. But some of the proposals, some of the options that they've come up with for the federal workforce, while they are just that, options, might be transferred into proposal, might they not?
Of course, that's what the purpose of the options are, of putting them out there, is that, you know, some lawmakers may decide, okay, let's run with it. I think it's in this current environment where there's so much focus on cutting spending and finding ways to do that, lawmakers are really grasping for ideas on how to reduce the spending, and that's what these options are for. So, yes, I would expect more kind of embracing from Congress of some of these options, but, you know, whether there's still the center of gravity to get them through is another matter. But, there's options in there like, that would affect all of our readers and your listeners, that would cut the federal pay raise every year. And all these options are spelled out through 2021. And so their proposal, it wouldn't just be civilian employee raises, it would also be raises for the military. But basically reducing, one option would reduce civilian employee raises by a half percentage point. Right now, the federal employee raise that Congress or that's proposed by the president each year is based on the index called the ECI. And basically, it's an index of wages and salaries across the country, and it's actually a bit dated. Even so, for instance, if I remember right, the way it works is that they will look at the ECI, that is the average increase of wages and salaries across the country, from the third quarter of 1 year to the third quarter of the next year, take that increase and basically subtract a half point from it, and that's what the administration generally proposes each year for the employee pay raise. So what they would do is, what the CBO option suggests is reduce that by another half point.
Yeah, and that wouldn't have that much. People wouldn't notice it, but it, over a lifetime of working, that would have a tremendous impact on their salaries or lack of their salaries. And the other end of that equation is talking about going from the high three average system, using that as the computation for retirement benefits, to the high five. Now, again, this has been presented as an option, I assume, every year by the CBO, and it gives people momentary heart flutters, and then it sort of goes away. But as you've stressed a number of times on this show, the times are different here now, and things that were kind of silly and bring out the usual suspects years ago are now possibilities.
Well, what's interesting about that specific idea is it was also included in the President's Deficit Reduction Commission report. So it does have some clout behind it, and we know that the so-called Gang of Six in the Senate, which is a group of three Republicans, three Democratic senators led by Senator Mark Warner from Virginia and Saxby Chambliss from Georgia, they are trying to develop within the Senate some bipartisan support for a package of long-term budget deal, basically, that would cut federal spending largely based on the proposals advocated by the President's Deficit Commission, which of course was a bipartisan commission. And so that proposal of there's no ways, there's no way to explain it other than it is a rollback of federal pensions. But, moving from a high 3-year calculation to a high 5-year certainly would lower the amount that federal retirees get each year. That's endorsed by the Deficit Commission and spelled out in the CBO options report.
Well, and if you compound that, going from a high three to a high five with 2 years without pay raises, there again, interesting things to the annuity. And the Deficit Commission, as I recall, actually proposed a 3-year federal pay freeze, and President Obama modified it to, so far at least, to a 2-year freeze.
That's right, yeah. And, the point you just made is an interesting one just to kind of think about for a moment. There is this pay raise freeze. It's not all feds are going to see their pay frozen for 2 years, because some are going to get within grade step increases and other promotions. So that will continue. But this kind of annual pay raise that we write about, talk about so much each year, is not going to happen this year. It's not going to happen next year. But you've got to imagine, what is that going to mean for the federal workforce that's on the bubble of retiring, that's retirement eligible? They've, a lot of them are in place for a number of reasons, but one reason is that, all feds are calculating, how do I get my high 3 salary average up to where I need it to be? How many more years do I need to spend in government to do that? If you take those 2 years of pay raises out of the equation, what is that going to mean for them? I wouldn't be surprised at all to see a lot of feds start retiring in much bigger numbers in the next couple of years as a result of that.
They've been talking about the retirement tsunami, and they may force it unwittingly. Listen, Steve Watkins, thank you very much for being with us. We're going to do this again next week. Thanks for all the information, and we will see you all here next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week.